Dr. Comers, I'm astounded at this statistic that 40% of Canadians are obese. How do you define obesity? Because that's almost half the people.
Well, obesity is defined right now by what's called a body mass index. And so if you're over a 25 body mass index, or BMI, you're considered overweight. And if you're over 30, you're considered obese. When you're above 35, you're grade 2 obese, and then there's above 40, which is grade 3, which is morbidly obese. And these classifications carry health risks with them. So being overweight is a certain health risk. I myself am overweight, but I'm probably all right. But those in the BMI 30 and above category have significantly higher risks for things like cardiovascular disease, for type 2 diabetes, and interestingly enough, for different kinds of cancers. So the risks to your health are considerable and can be quite severe.
You've been working for a number of years in this area of trying to figure out why we're obese and how hormones and various chemicals in the body affect that. Could you give me a recap of the work you've done up to this point?
Sure. We started out by looking quite a long time ago in 1997 to look at what different regions of the brain did in response to chemical messengers that made an animal eat. So we started in a nucleus called the paraventricular nucleus. It's part of a very old part of the brain called the hypothalamus. And nerve cells in the paraventricular nucleus appear to be important in regulating appetite. That is, if you put in a chemical messenger that we know makes animals eat when it's distributed through the brain, but when you put it exactly in that tiny cluster of cells, you get a very robust response. Animals will eat a great deal, and even if they're full, they'll eat as much as a full meal or more. If you keep on doing that, injecting it day in and day out, then the animal will actually become obese. When you stop doing that, they stop overeating and they regulate their body weight back to where it should be. The other side of that coin is that if you put in a chemical messenger called alpha-melanocyte stimulating hormone, or alpha-MSH, that will make the animal stop eating even if they're hungry. And you get the sort of the opposite effect of what MPY does with these alpha-MSH and other agonists collectively called melanocortins. So it's clear that this very small region of the brain plays an important role in regulating food intake. So we then went to look, using the tools that we have in our laboratory, to understand what these chemical messengers did to the nerve cells that we were interested in. And to make a very long story short, we found that there were a subset of nerve cells, not all nerve cells were sensitive to these chemical messengers, but a subset responded with an excitation. They got more excited when you put neuropeptide Y on, and less excited or more inhibited when you put the alpha-MSH on. And this excitation and inhibition was indirect because nerve terminals that normally keep these cells inhibited were being affected. So neuropeptide Y would make those nerve cells spit out less inhibitory transmitter, and alpha-MSH would make them spit out more inhibitory transmitter. So we learned that this system was very important in terms of how they worked.
So you've recently published in a journal about your most recent research. What was that looking at?
Well, all of the work that we did before was to help us understand what goes wrong when people become obese. And as you pointed out at the top of the interview, there are 40 or more percent of Canadians, and even more in the U.S. and other countries, that are actually obese. This is a terrific health hazard. And the problem, as I see it, is not losing weight, because people lose weight all the time, and if you have enough discipline, you can lose weight. The trouble is keeping the weight off once you've lost it. And the way people behave, and model animals behave, when you've made them fat for a long time and then put them on a diet, is they hate it. Their body rebels. They feel cold. They're hungry all the time. They feel weak. They're tired, lethargic, and this is a program that is designed to preserve and protect the organism from starvation. Now, it's hard to imagine that somebody who has a BMI of 45 is starving when you take away their food and put them on a diet. But their brain somehow doesn't actually know that. So there's something in the brain that tells you what the right body weight is according to your brain. And the question is, where is that and how does it work? So that's the question we set to tackle up.
So what did you find out?
It turns out that some kinds of rats, some strains of rats, are a very good model of people. So if you take these outbred Sprague Dawley rats, so it's a pretty heterogeneous strain, some of them you can feed a litter of those pups a high-fat, high-sugar diet. It tastes kind of like sugar cookie dough, no raisin though. But you put these animals on it, and some of those siblings will really like it, and they'll eat it, and they'll really gain weight very fast. And they'll stay on that diet for 10 weeks or so, and they've gained maybe 100 grams more or 150 grams more than the litter mates that also had access to that same diet but just said, no, they didn't particularly like it. They liked it a little bit, but not much. So when you take that whole bunch of rats and put them back on the regular rat chow, which is well-balanced but doesn't have a lot of calories, the rats that were resistant to the diet continue to grow slowly, just like the ones that were kept on the chow diet all along. But the fat ones, they'll defend that excess weight, but they won't continue to grow. We think in part because they just can't eat any more of that diet. So they take in more and more and more of this low-calorie diet. And so they maintain their weight as best as possible. But as you know, it's kind of like getting fat eating celery. It doesn't work. So they can maintain their weight, but they're cramming as much celery in as they can possibly fit, so to speak. So the question is why? Well, we looked at these nerve cells we've been studying and their inputs. And what we learned was that the go signal, the MPY signal, the hunger signal, that signal was still fine in the ones that were fat and put back on the low-calorie diet. That worked too, just as it did in the ones that were resistant to the high-fat diet. But when we looked at the stop signal, the melanocortin signal, the one that tells you to stop eating, go ahead and expend energy, we found that no matter how much of the drug we put on, the fat ones didn't respond anymore. They lost that stop signal. Whereas the ones that were resistant to the diet, and of course the ones that had never seen the high-fat diet in the first place, they responded just fine to that stop signal.
So what's going on there?
Well, so we thought about this for a little bit, and we've kind of felt sorry for those poor fat guys that were eating that sawdust diet. It's not very nice. It's healthy, it's nutritious, but it sure ain't fun. So we said, okay, once we'd shown that some individual animals really defended that excess weight when they'd been on that low-fat diet for several weeks, we put them back on the high-fat diet. And they went to town. They had a great time. They just loved that stuff and ate as much as they could. And after 5 or 6 weeks, their weight sort of leveled out, and we looked at what happened in their brain. And by that 5 or 6 weeks exposure to that high-fat diet, they gained that extra weight back where they thought they should be. And their stop signal came back. The go signal wasn't affected, it was still on, but the stop signal reappeared. And we were able to find out where that stop signal was coming from. It was coming from another part of the hypothalamus, and the receptors that mediate that stop signal, those cells had stopped making it. And when we got them back on the high-fat diet, they started making it again.
So eventually they will get to a point where their body says, okay, this is good for me.
Right.
Whether it is or not, and then that stop signal comes back. So is there then a way of taking it back and then reinstituting that stop signal, but they're at a healthy weight and they can maintain that?
Well, that's the great question. And there's no real easy answer to that. So what we're doing instead is now we're turning our attention to a very different problem. It's also with appetite. Remember, the brain controls all of your behavior. And eating is a behavior. Not eating is also a behavior. So we're studying another side of the coin, which is people who lose weight involuntarily when they have chronic illnesses like chronic heart failure, like cancers, like emphysema or COPD. And those people have terrible difficulties maintaining weight. And in fact, they expend more energy than they take in. So we're trying to make models in our same rat population to understand what happens when these animals show that and what changes in that same area of the brain when they become chronically ill and lose their appetite.
So at what stage are you now with that?
Well, we're just at the very beginning. So we just finished publishing this work a little while ago on the obesity, and we're starting into it. We think we have a good animal model now, and that's taken some time to work out as well. But now we're applying for funding with the federal government to try and continue this research, to try and understand what changes, because between these two conditions, we should have the two important aspects of body weight regulation covered and understood.
So when you take this and you try and apply it to the human situation where we have this obesity crisis across North America and looks like it's spreading throughout the world, what's the takeaway there for people who are worried about their weight and the fact that they lose weight, they gain it, and they just can't seem to keep it off?
I think at this point, the best tools we have is systematic understanding. The best advice is to not get fat in the first place. So with your kids, make sure that they stay healthy, eat healthy, and exercise. I hate to say it because I don't exercise, but many people like to. Keeping your kids at a healthy body weight is the best thing you can do for them. For yourself, if you're overweight or obese, understand that if you wish to lose weight, it's a worthwhile goal and it helps. More importantly is staying healthy and getting exercise. But if you wish to lose weight, you have to anticipate that your body's going to fight you back, and you simply have to understand that that's a natural part of the process and you need to be vigilant. We are working as hard as we can to try and understand this, because I would love to deliver a pill that puts you to the right body weight and lets you stay there.
So when you go back to what you fed the rats, you talked about a high-fat diet. So is there a message for our diet today?
There's a food writer, I think his name is Harold Bloom. He's got a very pithy way of discussing it. He says, eat food, mostly plants, not too much. It sounds marvelous, but basically it's like the golden rule, everything in moderation, enjoy whatever you like, just be aware that it's like your budget. You can only take so much, or you can only spend so much, and then that's it. Then you need to go on, bread and water, as it were. It's moderation in all things is healthy.
Who is it that's supporting your research?
Well, thanks for asking, because we're very grateful to the funding bodies that have supported us. So my collaborator on this project, Dr. Vicky Barrikos, and I have been supported by the Canadian Institutes of Health Research for the last while. We're applying right now for continued funding there. And I'm very grateful to Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research and its successor, Alberta Innovates Health Solutions, which has given me salary support, student support, and equipment support over 28 years to enable me to do these very long-term, very difficult experiments and give me the freedom to do that in the way I consider it proper. So I'm very grateful to anybody who's given me money now and in the future.
You know, one of the big questions in Alberta today is diversification. How do you see something like the research you're doing and the goal or the objective that you're trying to reach fitting into that diversification idea?
Well, people talk about the knowledge-based economy, and probably the best place for innovation right now is in biomedical research. It's not as easy as, let's say, making a new widget for the oil fields. But it's a great deal steadier demand in terms of people who are ill and require help, or people who require better understanding of how to live their lives in a healthy manner. That demand is constant and growing. And as a consequence, the market is there. We just need to fill the gaps that are missing. So I think that in terms of a diversified economy, this is, it's relatively cheap. It's a good way to spend money. And also, I bring great people to the province.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.